coder Scott Hanselman is here to talk Yahoo, Edward Snowden, and the Windows 10 developer mode. Tinder wants you, even if you're not single, and drones deliver Slurpees and catch criminals. Stick around for Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1561, recorded Friday, July 22nd, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. And by Trunk Club. Get clothes that fit and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/TNT and join Trunk Club today. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. This is Tech News Today, the show where we talk about all the technology news that you need to know with people who are passionate about technology. I am Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is out until Monday, but today I'm joined by Scott Hanselman, programmer, teacher, speaker, podcaster, and so much more. Welcome back, Scott.
Oh, hello. Thank you for having me yet again. I really much appreciate that.
Well, it's always great to have you. You gave us a little Skype lesson before the show started, got everything running. So I'm really excited to have you. You're going to talk about some of the stuff that you've written about. But first, we're going to talk about the general tech news. It appears that Yahoo's search for a suitor is nearing its bitter end. Sources report that a sale of Yahoo's search business to Verizon is imminent. This doesn't come as much of a surprise. We've all read the leaks and the speculation. And Verizon has been a front runner for a while, due in part to its massive pile of cash and its ability and desire to patch together a digital media empire along with its purchase of AOL. It seems like a game of monopoly to me. Do you have any thoughts on this, Scott?
You know, not to be totally honest, but not to be too rude to those people who, of course, work for Verizon and Yahoo. When this media, when this this news broke, I thought to myself, here are two companies that I couldn't care less about talking about hitching it, you know? I'm not a Verizon customer, and I really don't care about Yahoo. One thing that I was super surprised about, though, as regards to Yahoo, is that you know that they're shutting down their Yahoo Messenger today, and there are a huge group of people who are upset about that because apparently the oil and energy traders of the world exclusively trade using Yahoo Messenger. So now they're going to merge with Verizon, and no one will hear their screams.
That is interesting. I had no idea anyone still used Yahoo Messenger, you know, let alone giant groups of big industries. That's a little bit scary.
This is like a legit thing, and they actually have like secret codes and stuff, and they refer to the months as letters of the alphabet. So like September 2017 is U7. So they'll send this weird code, and it's all over Yahoo Messenger, and they are frantically looking for a replacement.
Well, I don't know where they'd find one. I mean, there's you know, who
ICQ?
Has messengers these days?
Yeah, ICQ maybe, or AOL. I'm not sure. If only there were some, you know, canonical international messaging system that had 2 billion users, you know, where we could just say like WhatsApp to each other with any phone. Maybe they'll find someone to do that.
Maybe they will. Well, fresh off of yesterday's announcement of a phone case that stops government surveillance, NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden appeared at a secret Comic-Con screening of the film Snowden by Oliver Stone. This was the first public screening of the film, and Jacob Castronekis from The Verge was there. Snowden was, of course, not exactly there, but beamed in from an undisclosed Russian location. The Verge says he spoke about the uneasy feelings he had about the film at one point, saying, "I don't think anyone looks forward to having a movie made about themselves, particularly someone who is a privacy advocate," which is interesting because I think lots of people look forward to a movie being made of them as long as it's a good movie that is about something great that they did. But, you know, it's speculation whether what he did is great or not. Are you interested in seeing this movie?
I am totally interested in seeing this movie. I am interested. I've written extensively on how Hollywood movies get tech wrong. And every time they make a new one, it's either an opportunity to cringe or it's an opportunity to see them get it right. I'm also super interested because, gosh, he really looks kind of like Snowden. I mean, like, if they were making a movie about me, I would want it to be someone who looks like me, but like plus two better looking. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they've found that person right here. I mean, look at him. He looks like a better looking Snowden. And that's what you would want if they were making a movie about you.
That's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, for those not in the know of the latest 20-ish heartthrob. I guess his family said, Edward Snowden said that his family also said that he sounds like him, which was interesting.
He's definitely got it down. He's an amazing actor. He's 35, actually, so with all due respect, not the latest 20-something heartthrob. He is a contemporary.
Good to know. So are you a fan of Mr. Robot, the TV show?
Absolutely. One of the things about Mr. Robot that's significant to point out is that almost all the tech is perfect. They care deeply about getting the tech right.
Yeah, I love that show so much. I could talk about it for the next hour. I won't give any spoilers. But, you know, of all the things that people talk about it, it has amazing female characters, like more than one of them, three in some seasons, you know, that are fully developed, that they're not there to drive the main characters plot along. They're their own thing. If you haven't checked out the show, please do.
Yeah, they have a fully formed young woman who is a hijabi, and her being a hijabi isn't the point of her character, which is totally fantastic. So yes, highly recommended show.
Right, and if you're a cord cutter and you're an Amazon Prime member, that's how I've been watching it, because I don't have regular TV. So we'll see if they get the Snowden movie correct, as well as Mr. Robot. Because yes, this was at Comic-Con, and I guess Mr. Robot is completely taking over Comic-Con. That's the most popular thing there this week. Allegedly.
And someone found recently a series of Mr. Robot secrets where an IP address was used on the show that actually led to a real server, and then bouncing from place to place within that has led people on a series of fairly complicated web-based scavenger hunts.
I will check that out. So moving on to another security story. Did you know that if you're famous, people will hand over their passwords to you? The New York Times reports that internet celebrity Jack Johnson has been hacking his fans' account. How does he do this? He asked for their credentials, and tens of thousands of them complied. The YouTube and Vine star then leaves funny videos on the fans' Twitter account. He'll play the keyboard. He'll do somersaults. He will praise their pinned tweets with the hashtag hacked by Johnson. The Times says these kids who handed over their passwords knew exactly what they were doing, and it was a normal act of teenage rebellion. What do you think about this, Scott?
I am frantically Googling to find out who the heck this person is. Maybe one of the 20-something contemporaries that you referred to previously.
I think you've gone above. I think he's like 18. He might be 20. I think he is just 20. Yeah, I don't know who he is. But I've stopped trying to figure out who Vine and YouTube celebrities are. There are way too many of them. You could never keep up.
You know, the part about this that's so funny is that this Jack Johnson is not the other Jack Johnson.
No.
Because Jack Johnson, the musician at Jack Johnson Music, is my age. This kid is one third of my age. So yeah, you know, if you want to give your password to somebody and you don't care about your account, knock yourself out. Me, I've got two-factor auth, and I'm considering a couple of extra factors just in case.
Well, the Mike wrote about this story, and they said they contacted Jack Johnson's lawyer, and he said he has two-factor turned on. Because the other side of this is, if he's having tens of thousands of people emailing their credentials to him, then, you know, as our friends on Mr. Robot would know, who better to hack than that guy?
That's a really good point. I didn't think about that. And now he is arguably the holder of those, the keeper of those. And if those kids haven't, you know, changed their passwords, potentially any additional hacks that could result in something bad happening could roll all the way back to him.
Exactly. I think his lawyer also said that he deletes the passwords right away. So I don't know if that's true, but it is. I think that's really interesting, because it's this new kind of, I mean, he's trying to promote himself. He's trying to rise above all the other YouTube celebrities that we don't know about. And it's sort of, you know, it's like, we used to just pin pictures up on our wall, but now it's like to get this star to post something on our own Twitter is, I guess that's the new thing, but not really necessarily safe.
Well, but it's a level of engagement that I think we haven't seen before. Like, there are celebrities who have millions of followers. And I will say, as someone who tweets someone when I see a movie, like I see a movie and I see someone in the movie who might be a secondary star of the movie, I will go and check their Twitter. And if I notice that they have less than a million followers, I'll say, hey, I really enjoyed you in Foo. I saw you in this movie and it was great. And then they will favorite it. And I'll go, ooh, I had an interaction. They're a real person. That's so cool. To then get a reply is another level, right? And to have a conversation with them and a legitimate back and forth is another level. And then for them to go and interact with my my account, although I wouldn't give them my password, maybe I could OAuth them, is even cooler, you know? So there's something to be said for the fact that Twitter puts us closer to these folks than ever before.
Exactly. I think a couple weeks ago, I got an alert that Nolan Bushnell had followed me on Twitter, you know, creator of Atari. And I talked to Jason Howell, who hosts this, and he's like, I got that too. And then we looked and he follows, like, he's one of those rare people that are famous that follow like 20,000 people or something. Like, I guess one day he just went in and started following everybody. But it was still this moment where I was like, oh, Nolan Bushnell just followed me on Twitter.
So you were, it's always impressive when they follow you and then you look at their followers and it's like 4 million followers.
Right.
And 4 million following.
Yes.
Yeah, I got followed by Tay Diggs and I was like, yes. And then I was like, oh, well, he follows everyone. So.
Right. It still feels good for a minute.
Thanks, Tay.
Right. It still feels good for a minute. Yeah. I don't support this kind of asking teenagers to hand over their passwords, because I just think that is rife for scams. You know, who's the next person to pretend like they're Jack Johnson and say, send me, you know, DM me your password in a fake account. So hopefully I didn't give anyone any ideas. But if you have given your password to your favorite YouTube star, change your password. Amazon drones are yet to deliver sneakers to my home, but 7-Eleven has completed its maiden home drone delivery, dropping off Slurpees, a chicken sandwich, donuts, hot coffee, and candy directly to somebody's front door. 7-Eleven partnered with the drone company Flirty to make the FAA-approved delivery. Last year, we told you about Flirty's first delivery ever, which was to deliver medical supplies from an airfield to a medical clinic. Slurpees are a far cry from medical supplies, but the coffee, that's another story. How do you feel about drone delivery from 7-Eleven?
I'm not interested. I mean, I'm a drone owner. I could point and lift up three different drones that I've got down here in the corner. I am not interested in them coming to my airspace. I don't care if it's Amazon or if it is 7-Eleven. And frankly, leave the house unless you're unable to. For the differently abled, maybe, but for the average person, it's go outside.
Yeah, I mean, what's more convenient than 7-Eleven? Like, that's the height of convenience. Because, I mean, we're not talking about people in rural areas that can't get 7-Eleven. This drone is only going to be going a mile. So if you can't go a mile, I mean, exactly what you said about differently abled, those people, that's fine. But for everyone, go get your own Slurpee.
Yeah, not for me.
Well,
maybe
the-
not yet. Maybe I'm an old guy. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I do have a pocket supercomputer, and there are people like my brother who has a flip phone, and he's younger than I am. And he always tells me how great having a flip phone is because he's not connected. So maybe in 5 years, when everyone else has the drones swarming over our, you know, dropping, I don't know, Mike and Ike's. Is that what I'm going to do? I'm going to order Mike and Ike's and like a 40-ounce drink, and they're going to somehow lower the drink directly into my... Are they going to come and move my jaw for me as well? Can I get like a KFC sadness bowl delivered, like Patton Oswalt says?
That would be great. I mean, yeah, if drones could deliver food directly to our mouths, then I'm there. Otherwise, After the break, Scott talks Windows 10 developer mode. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. Work is no longer a location. Teams can be together half a world away. Igloo is a modern intranet designed to keep everyone on the same page. You can share files, have real conversations in real time, and do it all while still being able to use the apps that you currently use, like Box and Google Drive and Skype. Igloo brings everything together and creates a single destination that lets you focus on your work. It's a cloud platform that helps you share files, collaborate on documents, blog updates, coordinate calendars, and manage projects. Anyone can add content based on their permissions with a drag and drop widget and a WYSIWYG editor. Igloo also offers a variety of access, authentication, and identity services to ensure that only authorized users have access in private clouds over SSL with 256-bit encryption. Unlike other solutions, you can customize Igloo to fit your needs and work with your current IT investments like Office 365, Salesforce, SharePoint, Active Directory, file sharing solutions like Google Drive and Box, and support systems like Zendesks. Put simply, Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. When you sign up through our link, you can get your very own Igloo for up to 10 people, absolutely free for as long as you want. Just go to igloosoftware.com/TWIT. So you have 1 week left to download Windows 10 for free, but my guess is if you're watching this show and you want Windows 10, you've already gotten it, which means you will also get the new Windows 10 Anniversary Edition. And if you're a developer, Scott says there are good things to come. What can you tell us about that?
You know, am I able to share my screen? That would be super cool if I could. Is that allowed on the show? Are
sure.
we good to do that? Let
sure.
me see if we can pull that off here. Let me say share screen, and I'll just throw it over to this display, and maybe you can let me know if you can see that okay.
If anyone can do it, you can.
I've lost your audio. I've lost your video, but can you see this?
I can see it, yep.
So this is developer mode. You can go to the Windows settings in the next version of Windows 10, and just say that you're a developer, you know, or an IT person or a pro. And you can then scroll down, and it's got all these great new settings like things developers or even we could say pro users care about. I'm not seeing that being shared. There we go.
Yeah, I see it.
There we go. Good. So I could say things like, well, you know, I really want to see my file extensions, or I want to see, hidden in system files, or great ones like show the full path in the title bar. And these are settings that have always existed, okay? You know, I can tell you where they are. They're over in this old-looking dialogue, right? But what this has done is it's collected them all in one place. So what I proposed in my blog post is let's fill this up with all sorts of great features and advanced tweaks so that I can go in there as a developer and say, check all, and get these kinds of features turned back on. This is the kind of stuff that we as developers find ourselves hunting for, and what they've done is they've collected it, and I think it's a great feature, and I think it's also perhaps a harbinger of things to come, which I like. They've also pulled the Windows Insider program out to out of Windows Update and into its own place, so that I can decide how much, let's just say, how much a tolerance for pain that I have. Right? Do I want to go doing the Windows Insider fast, slow, or release, and things like that. So I really think that they're moving in the right direction, and I'm pretty excited about the next version of Windows 10. That's, I guess, is coming pretty soon.
Yeah, and I think I called it the Anniversary Edition, but Alex, who's our Windows expert, says it's the Anniversary Update, not the Anniversary Edition. So I guess that's important.
Oh, gosh, I didn't know that. Okay.
So is the developer mode new to Windows 10, or was it in Windows 8 also?
No, this is a first time I've ever seen it is in this anniversary update to Windows 10. So that's new for Windows 10 and kind of one of the many reasons to get Windows 10. The other one I'm excited about is the ability to run Linux applications at the command line.
Is it in Windows 10 Pro or Home or both?
I don't know. Okay. I know that I have Pro. But I have to go and see. I'd have to install the Home Edition and check. Folks could, of course, check it out now if they wanted to sign up for the Windows Insider. You can go out there and Google or Google with Bing for Windows Insider and sign up for that program and get the latest build. The build that I have and I think that everyone has right now is, let's take a look, 14.393. So I've just gone out to the command prompt and typed ver. You can do that too. I have version 10, 14.393, and it's certainly on that one. I do not know if it is Pro or Home. Sounds like a Pro kind of thing, though, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. So, and you work for Microsoft, but not on the Windows team. And on your blog post at Hanselman.com, you say that if people are excited about this, developers, they should leave that in the comments, and then Microsoft can see that.
I say that, of course, selfishly, because I have a blog and you can put comments in it. And then what I'll end up doing is I'll go and dig around and find out who owns that feature. This is one of the weird things that I do as a Microsoft employee is that I have a blog. But it is not a Microsoft blog. It's my blog. And I had it for 10 years before I went to work for Microsoft. And presumably when I leave Microsoft, I will keep this blog because it's mine. But I often talk about things that I like that may or may not be Microsoft related. And I'm basically doing it on my own. And then if I dig something or don't dig something, I'll go and hunt down those people at Microsoft. It's right on the razor's edge of being okay. Certainly the other thing to do is to talk to the folks on Twitter that are on the Windows team that are paying attention and tell them, because I think that the new Microsoft is doing a great job of talking to people and engaging. So certainly don't just tell me, go to the Windows Insider blog, go to the feedback hub and find that feature. You can go to the start menu, type feedback. It's an app in Windows, and then add or upvote features that you like. They absolutely look at that, and they absolutely make decisions based on the votes that those items get.
Yeah, I agree with you about the new Microsoft being better, and better for developers. I mean, really working with developers and working across cross platforms too as well. So it's exciting times. Well, earlier this month, you experienced a hardware disaster. Not very nice of me to bring this back up and make you relive it. But for the benefit of everyone watching or listening, do you care to tell us what happened?
It was bad. There was like smoke and brimstone, and it smelled bad. You know what I mean? I was messing with my computer, and I was turning things on and off, and there was a pop. And then there was another pop, and it was like a cascade of pops. And what happened was, as best I can tell, my UPS, my uninterruptible power supply, the thing that's supposed to save me from things like this, had some kind of a surge. And I had some kind of a multi-directional surge because it popped at the fuse in the garage. It popped at the UPS. It started to smoke. And it ultimately popped at the power supply inside of my computer that I'm on right now. So I lost basically everything. But fortunately, I am obsessive about backups. I also lost the SSD, so it went from the power supply all the way into the SSD. Chaos ensued. But as I say, I am obsessive about backups. So I went and got a new SSD. I've got a backup here. I've got a backup in the cloud, and I've got a backup at a safety deposit box. So fortunately, my local was fine. But I always believe in the backup rule of three, which is, you know, three backups, two different mediums, and one offsite. I was able to get back up and running in about four hours.
That's great. Do you have any recommendations for cloud backups?
Personally, I like CrashPlan, but I also like the idea of having your own personal cloud, which in my case, I have a Synology, which is a kind of a Linux device that you can just buy off the shelf. It's really easy. It's great for pro. There you go. There's actually a very lovely, maybe you could zoom in on that that diagram there. This is an older post, but a great diagram. What's nice about this is you can see I've got Dropbox, I've got CrashPlan, I'm also a programmer, so I've got GitHub. But then you see there, I've just got hard drives, offsite backups at the parents' house. I'm a big fan in buying two hard drives. And actually, if you go back to my camera, this is true story. There's two hard drives. Bought them real cheap. Marked them A and B, and I rotate. And every time I visit my parents or every time I go to the bank, you just swap them. I happen to have them together right now because I'm doing that swap right now. That's a simple backup as well, a cloud backup that is not in your house. But CrashPlan is great. The Synology device is great. Dropbox is great. OneDrive is great. Doesn't matter. The point is a hard drive on your desk in your house isn't a backup.
So you do everything on there, all like, you know, your program, you send all your code, all your photos, like all your personal documents. That's all. You don't use any other cloud sources than the ones you mentioned?
No. Let me think about this. To put it simply, I've got a local backup that, again, could fail, but it's local. It's a hard drive. And I use the Windows file history feature, which is lovely. It's just like Time Machine for Mac. You plug in a hard drive, you turn on file history, and every half an hour it backs up your machine. But then I use Dropbox, which is kind of where I live. I do the swapping of hard drives between my house and the parents' house, or my house and the bank. And then my Synology backs up to CrashPlan. But I think the point isn't about a particular brand or a particular company. The point is about making it simple, right? If I have to think about my backup every day, that's a problem. And that's why I like an automatic feature like Time Machine on a Mac or File History on Windows. And then an easy way to backup, like, oh, I'm going to the parents. I'll pick up my hard drive and I'll swap to get one offsite. So important. It's heartbreaking to hear about people losing their PhD theses or their startups projects because it's just sitting on their desktop and then their Mac dies.
Yeah. Is it just second nature to you? Because for me, it's like I listen to you and I think, I'm going to go home. This is how I'm going to spend my Friday night. I'm going to get everything on the hard drive. I'm going to take it over to my parents' house. But I will probably forget. So do you recommend any like sort of system for reminders? Like, do you just set yourself a calendar reminder to do this? Or is it just second nature for you at this point?
For me, it was about attaching my, first certainly having it happen. I mean, like, when it happens, you change your tune. So let my pain be your pain and get a regular system going. When I say the backup rule of three and I say three backups, try to make up an automatic system. Like, you have a machine. Do you have another hard drive? Can you turn on file history?
Yes.
That's a one-time thing. So do that. You know, do you have Dropbox? Get that stuff off your desktop and into your Dropbox. If you have OneDrive or Google Drive, whatever, stop saving stuff to your local machine. Now, as far as, like I say, visiting the parents or going to the bank, you have to attach it to something you're going to do anyway. So literally getting this hard drive into the kitchen where my keys are, I'll put the keys on top of the hard drive, right? And then stick it in the kitchen and then leave with it. And if that doesn't work, put the hard drive on top of the keys and then take it with you, because you're going to your parents anyway, or you are visiting your friend anyway. It doesn't matter. It just has to be not in your house. I actually had a friend, true story, house burned down. Mm-hmm. House burned to the ground, lost everything. People get hard drives stolen out of their cars. Just please, it's so painful. Every day someone is losing something fundamental. Every photo, photos of the kids when they were babies. I had a friend lose an entire album. It was a DJ, lost everything, stolen out of the front of their car. Please back up your stuff. It's painful. Please, please, Megan, back up your stuff.
Okay, I will. Well, Scott, that's why I love your blog, because it covers just the, you know, the hardcore programming, coding stuff, and then the emotional stuff, too. I mean, you had a great post that I read about self-care, just, you know, taking care of yourself. I love that. So you guys can check that out at Hanselman.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Scott. Is there anything else that I know you host Hansel Minutes. There's some great some great interviews that you've done. I think you're basically the Terry Gross for developers.
I appreciate that. That is my goal. That's exactly what I'm trying to do, is be the Terry Gross or the fresh air for developers. Thank you. Yes, so people can just check out Hanselman.com. From there, you can see where I'm speaking. You can see my podcast. You can explore my blog. I've got a couple of podcasts, and I'm going to be, there you go. And I just literally see right there, no comments right there on July 22nd, 5 minutes before I came on the show with you. I just did a thing on making YouTube videos look sharp on a budget, because this is the other thing, right? There's no reason that doing computers has to be expensive.
Excellent. Yeah. And you also have a great video. If people are going to be doing any tech speaking, then on how to do that. If you are nervous about doing a speech and you want to learn, get some tips, you can get that at Hanselman.com too. Thanks so much for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Take care. After the break, Tinder has a new group date feature. Alex Kantrowitz from BuzzFeed is here to tell us how it works. But first, let's take a minute to thank Trunk Club, the sponsor of this episode. Let's say you're planning on swiping right on a whole group of people. You will want to dress up for your group date. Trunk Club can help. Summer is here, and it's time to spruce up your wardrobe with summer essentials like short-sleeve button-downs, lightweight blazers, and swimwear. With Trunk Club, you'll never have to step foot inside a store for your clothing needs again. Plus, you'll get your very own personal stylist for free. Just type in your measurements and share your style and spending preferences to connect with the right Trunk Club stylist. He or she will contact you via phone, email, or messenger to understand your unique look and learn more about what you're looking for. Your stylist will select items for your trunk from over 80 top brands and will send you a preview of clothes that may be a good fit. Review your trunk via email and make edits before it's shipped right to your door. You'll have 10 days to try on the clothes, keep what you like, and send back the rest. Trunk Club is not a subscription service, and shipping is always free both ways. Premium clothes, expert advice, no work, thanks to your very own personal stylist at Trunk Club. Trunk Club is backed by Nordstrom, which means they have the highest standards in quality and customer service. Make a statement at the next big event on your calendar with a look that's handpicked just for you and your style. Get started today at trunkclub.com/TNT. Look and feel your best with clothes that fit you perfectly. That's trunkclub.com/TNT. And we thank Trunk Club for their support. Tinder Social launched yesterday. Alex Kantrowitz from BuzzFeed is here to tell us all about it. Welcome back, Alex.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming on the Friday night. It's good that we're talking about group dates. So how does Tinder Social work exactly?
It works by you grouping up with one of your Facebook friends that are on Tinder, and then you swipe through the platform trying to find people to hang out with. That you can go on a group date or just have a good time.
So is it for people that really, I mean, is it for single people and non-single people too? Is it just for people to find friends as well?
I mean, you could use it to do that. You could also use regular Tinder to find friends as well. I asked them, is this a group dating platform or is it just for people looking to meet up? And basically what Tinder CEO Sean Rad told me was that there's no context to the meetup. It can be for dates or it can be just trying to find people to go out with and have a good time. I expect most of the people are going to be using it to date because it is Tinder. But I'm sure there are also going to be instances where people meet up and they're just looking to hang out. For instance, if you're in a new city, it sounds like it could be a good way to meet people.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, like, you know, Petaluma is a city that doesn't have, I mean, it has single people, but not a lot of them. And I can imagine that someone could use this in that way to find other single people where it would be harder than, you know, especially if they move from San Francisco or something. So you said that it finds the people that are your Facebook friends. So has Tinder always shown people that your Facebook friends that you were on Tinder?
No, this is brand new, actually. And you have to opt in to see which of your Facebook friends have also opted in and are on Tinder. I tried it out earlier this afternoon. It was kind of nice being able to use Tinder from my desk. And I found that a very good portion of my Facebook friends are using the app, unsurprisingly. But it was interesting to be able to scroll through for the first time and see who's on there and how they're presenting themselves.
So what did you think about the app itself? Were you able to find a group?
Not yet. I asked my friend Sam to join me in a Tinder group, A, because I wanted to try it out, and B, because I think we'd be a pretty good group. And so far, I haven't been able to convince him. So, Sam, if you're watching right now, I think that you should reconsider and join me in this group.
Right. Who needs Tinder when you have a podcast where you can just ask people things and shame them into not doing what you ask?
Exactly. I was hoping to use this platform just to make my friends hang out with me. That's right now, the regular venues so far don't seem to be doing the trick. So,
well, so a BuzzFeed colleague of yours in Australia has been trying this out for a while. And what does she think?
That's right. She likes it a lot. She says she's using it a lot for the banter. And hasn't met up with the group yet. So it seems like meeting up with the group might be an obstacle. But she sent me some screenshots I couldn't publish in my post that showed that the conversations were lively. I can understand why her and her friends are using it.
So do the groups have to be like one gender or one, you know, preference, one sexual preference? Or can it be any group, any kind of people in the group?
Okay, I can't say definitively yes or no, but having gone through, and it's probably a detail I should have asked about, but having gone through the app on my own, it seems like you can have any sort of group you want. I think I saw all my friends on Tinder, male, female, and all types of sexual preferences in the people that it suggested that I joined a group with.
Well, this is such an interesting feature. I don't know if you listen to the Startup podcast on Gimlet Media, but their second season, they covered these two women that were trying to start a company. That this was their original. I think their original idea was first like to have a Tinder like service where you didn't use pictures and you just judged people based on what they said, and like a wonderful idea, but nobody liked it. Everybody wanted to see someone's picture.
Surprised that didn't work.
But then their second idea was to have group dates, so because it's more comfortable for people. You're not, you know, putting yourself at so much of a risk. But then they couldn't sell it. And, you know, in Silicon Valley, they just couldn't make a living or they couldn't sell this app. But now Tinder is using it, which is interesting. So did you watch that? Did you listen to that podcast at all?
I did listen to the podcast. I haven't listened to that one specifically. One of the advantages for Tinder is that it's so big. They mentioned in the interview I did with them that having a Tinder scale allows you to really give these products a chance to take off where they might not have otherwise. So where these entrepreneurs tried and failed, there's a chance that Tinder won't necessarily follow the same path that they did.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes sense for them to do this because Tinder is one of the only apps that, you know, you hear reporters talking about it and, you know, they always say, well, I've never used it because I'm married, you know. And so they would want, I mean, not just reporters, but they don't want to block off, you know, a certain portion of the population to their app.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And having gone through it today, I'm really looking forward to trying it and who knows? I think it's still going to be, there'll still be a stigma for people that are in relationships to join and say, no, I'm just using Tinder social. It's like, oh, really? You know, I could use some analogies, but I won't because I want to keep it G-rated. But I think that you're going to have a hard time keeping your significant other non-suspicious if you're going on Tinder social hangouts or dates or whatever it is. But it's possible. And yeah, if you're trying to figure out what this online dating thing is all about, it's a really nice entryway. It could get people who are just like not interested in meeting strangers one-on-one to see if they can work something out this way.
Well, I know you also reported this week on the Facebook drone that's shooting down internet access. You have some great photos up there. Is there anything else that you've been working on this week that we should know about?
Well, Facebook and Twitter earnings are coming up next week, and I think it's going to be an interesting moment for both companies. Twitter is going to have to prove again that it's growing. We have this conversation every quarter, but it did bump the users up a little bit last quarter, although it did, it didn't do so well on the revenue side. So we'll see if they can reverse the revenue trend, which has traditionally been their strong suit. And Facebook in the past, past few months has made this tweak in its algorithm that it says is going to show you more friends and family. So maybe we'll get an update on that. One of the things that's interesting with that company is they seem to be going the direction that their competitors are, or their strongest competitors. So back in the day, they were all about news when Twitter was the other big contender. And now they're all about friends and family and raw in the moment because Snapchat is so big. So we'll see if they discuss Snapchat in their earnings call and if they can explain a little bit more about the recent moves they've made.
And what about Twitter? Do you think that they've taken a sort of firmer stance on trolls as of late? Do you think that's going to affect earnings at all?
I don't think so. I think that from an earnings standpoint, Twitter probably will do better if it censors more, just in terms of like, one of the big things advertisers look for is quote unquote brand safe environments. So if Twitter can make its platform more brand safe, they probably have a chance to make more money on the platform. That, unfortunately for them, like kind of runs into this other thing that they've always hung their hat on, which is that they're the free speech wing of the free speech platform. It used to be something that they said, we haven't heard it from them in a while, and I think it's clear that they're kind of backing off that statement. Mm-hmm. So it's a balance. I mean, they admit there's a balance between harassment and free speech. And I guess where it gets tricky is who decides, right? You know, now that we've moved a lot of our discussion into big social platforms like Facebook and Twitter, it's gone from a place where the open web was the open web and everybody had a voice and it was messy to now you have these big platforms that are the information filters. And how much authority do you want to give them over what is said? And that's a big question. I don't have the answer to it. I think it's something that's really difficult to figure out and why both companies have struggled. This isn't unique to Twitter. Facebook struggled with it as well. And it's going to be important to be keeping watch on it, both for users of the platform and reporters. As this stuff happens every day, and it's not something that we should, sort of just watch and say, okay, well, they did that and let it go. We have to keep a close eye on it and make sure that we get all the details from the platforms when they do stuff like this, because it is very important.
Yeah, it is. It is a really tough question. And I mean, you hear from Twitter more and more that analogy of like, this is my house. And I'm, if I'm going to invite you into my house and you're going to throw garbage on the floor, like I'm going to kick you out. And that's kind of new from Twitter. I mean, it's the analogy, like you understand that analogy, but it's new to hear that from Twitter, I think.
Yeah, it's new. And I mean, Jack Dorsey in some tweets yesterday seemed to indicate that more control is on the way. We don't know if it's going to be more centralized booting that the company has done, or whether it's going to be on behalf of like more user controls, like different ways to filter things. So they have this quality filter that they released to verified users, but I'm pretty sure it hasn't made its way outside. And even with that, verified users seem to be having trouble making sure that their mentions and their feeds are free of abuse. So it's a big challenge for the company. You don't want to turn into a cesspool. Like that's one thing you don't want to do. And they're definitely on the precipice. They can be on the precipice of that if the issue isn't addressed carefully. But then there's, of course, the other side of the equation. Like, one way to make sure there's no abuse on the platform is to just censor anything that's questionable at all. But, you know, that's not necessarily a healthy place for a very important filter of information to be.
Right. I mean, questionable to whom, right? I mean, that's the big question. Well, Alex, thank you so much for coming on. Alex is a reporter at BuzzFeed. He covers all the social and communications, and so you can check his stuff next week. Be reporting on Facebook and Twitter. He's at Kantrowitz on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Take care.
Hey, bye.
After the break, the price of a DJI Phantom drone finally paid off for one California family. But first, let's thank ZipRecruiter, the sponsor of this episode. The only thing harder than finding a new job is hiring someone for a job that you need to be filled. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates fast? Posting jobs in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And with ZipRecruiter, now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job boards, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Just post once and watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. Search by skills, location, work experience, and more. ZipRecruiter's advanced matching technology delivers the most relevant candidates based on your criteria. ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages that look great on any screen. Add their unique mobile apply process for more visitors and applicants. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can add multiple users to your account. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses and is trusted by hundreds of Fortune 500 companies. More than 125 million candidate applications have been delivered. So whether you're hiring now or plan to hire in the near future, check out their blog for recruiting tips and hiring resources. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Access millions of resumes on ZipRecruiter with thousands of new ones added daily. ZipRecruiter is the fastest way to hire great people. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT, and we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. And finally tonight, if you thought drones were just for delivering Slurpees, you would be wrong. Engadget reports on a 14-year-old vacationing in Camano Island in Washington State who chased down some thieves with his DJI Phantom equipped with a 4K video camera. The burglars were trying to steal the family's boat, but after calling 911, the boy followed the boat at 50 miles per hour with his drone hovering 20 feet above the boat. He didn't chase the burglars all the way to their destination, but the footage that he did have was enough for the police to guess the rest of the way and find the criminals. So here's the lesson we learned. Drones are good, and Pokemon Go is the thing that everybody hates now. And that is it for today's show. Jason will be back on Monday. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv or leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can also hit us up on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV and keep them coming. The How I Watch, hashtag How I Watch TNT. Send us a picture or a photo of how you watch the show. You can find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney. Thanks to our technical director, Kara, and thanks to Mario for running the prompter. And thanks to all of the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And of course, thanks to you for talking tech with us. We will see you on Monday.